Hey everyone, it's me, Amy Walter. This podcast is brought to you by the Cook Political Report. So if you love these conversations, you should consider becoming a subscriber to the Cook Political Report. It gives you access to our analysis, elections ratings, and all the crucial information you need as we head into Election Day. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Listeners can use the discount code ODD10, that's ODD, the number 10, to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is only available to new subscribers. Okay, on to the show. Hello, I'm Amy Walter, and welcome to The Odd Years. It's hard to overstate just how important Pennsylvania plays in deciding the Electoral College winner. If Vice President Harris loses the state, she'd need to win North Carolina or Georgia, as well as Nevada and the remaining blue wall states of Wisconsin and Michigan. Now, if Trump were to lose Pennsylvania, he'd need to pick off at least one of those other Midwestern swing states, a Michigan or Wisconsin, and would need to win every single one of those Sun Belt states, including three that he lost last time, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, as well as North Carolina. Right now, polling suggests the outcome in the state is on a knife's edge, which isn't surprising given that Biden carried the state by just about 80,000 votes in 2020, and in 2016, Trump won the state by just over 68,000 votes. So what makes Pennsylvania the swingiest of swing states? Way back in the 1980s, Democratic strategist James Carville dubbed the state Philadelphia on one side, Pittsburgh on the other, and Alabama in the middle. But our guests today, Asim Shukla and Julia Taruso, Philadelphia Inquirer reporters, took a detailed look at voting patterns in the state and identified five distinct places in the state that are critical to a candidate's success there. Julia covers politics and our divided electorate for The Inquirer, and up until recently, Asim was a data reporter for The Inquirer. You can now find him at the San Francisco Chronicle. And please, by the way, go check out their really fantastic interactive piece. We're linking to it in our show notes. And now, here's my interview with Julia and Asim. Well, Julia Taruso and Asim Shukla, thank you so much for joining me. I have to say, the piece that you all wrote this August called The Five Kind of Places That Win Pennsylvania was really one of the most detailed and incisive looks at the Pennsylvania electorate that I've ever seen. And I thought, I need to talk to these guys. Before we jump into that, though, I want to talk to you both about what it feels like to actually live in Pennsylvania as just Pennsylvania residents in the state that everybody is counting on to be the most important electoral college state.
I think I always have about 15 unread text messages, which might be true of people all over the country, but it is a deluge of text messages, of mailings at my door. You know, you go to the bar to watch a Phillies game, and every single ad is either, a pro Harris ad or a anti-Harris ad or a pro-Trump ad or an anti-Trump ad. It really does feel like we're at the center of the universe. And then to also be covering it, either the principal candidate or their running mate seems to be here, you know, twice a week easily.
Right.
So it's a lot. How are you feeling, Asim?
I echo what Julia said. I like had this moment yesterday. I was like, oh my God, my phone is blowing up. And it was just election spam. Like one text after the other.
And just in talking to people, it seems like, do normal people talk about this, or is it just those of us who cover politics who are as invested in talking about Pennsylvania?
To me, I feel like it's sort of amazing that, like, you know, people do seem to care about Pennsylvania. And I think they seem to understand how important it is. And it does feel different than it has even in 2016 or 2020. And I don't know if that's just, the kind of like navel gazing, oh, we're here, we're the center of the universe kind of thing. or whether that really is the perception and that's different from before.
Yeah, I think certainly in terms of television ads, that's how I hear it most from quote unquote real people. You know, they are just getting so many attack ads that they kind of don't know what to make of it. I talked to a lot of undecided voters, which is a mysterious universe. But I think that's where the more average voter is really feeling the spotlight on them. I even interviewed a woman recently who didn't want to give me her first and last name because she didn't want to get overly inundated as a undecided voter in Pennsylvania. She thought that, like, you know, they might come after her more than they already are.
Well, yeah, right. Is it the candidates coming after her or like CNN and, you know, every political reporter in America descending on her as well? Well, thank you for that perspective. So we can now dig in to what you all have done. And Asim, I'll start with you. And then Julia, obviously, I want you to jump in as well. But you all broke the state of Pennsylvania into five distinct political regions. Asim, can you describe them for us and talk a little bit about how they have shifted from 2016 to 2020?
Yeah. So the five regions broadly were divided kind of on three demographic buckets. So first is by population density, which we know is very strongly correlated with vote choice now. So the first two of those buckets are defined exclusively based on that. There are rural areas, which have fewer than what sort of a legislative committee in the Pennsylvania legislature defines to be a rural population density. Then there's suburban areas, which is from that threshold up to like 2,000 people per square mile. And then there's urban areas. And the urban areas we subdivided because there's a lot of diversity in our cities and people vote very differently on certain attributes. So we divided them up first based on race. So non-white, majority non-white areas are historically heavily Democratic. And then majority white areas are different based on whether they're highly educated or whether they're not. And so that's sort of how the five groups are defined. Rural areas, heavily Republican, got even more Republican in 2020. Suburban areas are a majority Republican in Pennsylvania still, despite moving strongly towards Democrats in the last couple of cycles. So there's still juice to squeeze there for Democrats. And then in urban areas, if the really educated majority white areas are pretty Democratic and still getting more so, while areas that are not as college educated have moved away from the Democratic Party. Although in 2020, you saw a little bit of mean reversion. And then finally, the majority non-white urban areas, super, super Democratic, but losing votes for Democrats slightly.
And Julia, you know, just in looking through this and the data that you all put together, it seems to me that the sort of pathways for each candidate then in 2024 look something like this, and tell me how you see it, but whether or not Harris can hold on to Biden's numbers in those white working class urban areas where Biden was able to pick up about 35,000 more votes than Hillary Clinton had gotten. Talk to us about what a white working class urban place is. Who are these voters? And how do you think, from the reporting that you're doing, how does Harris do with these voters? Or maybe how is Trump doing? Is he doing any better, you think, than he was back in 2020?
Yeah, I think those towns you just identified are one of the key unpredictable kind of swing town, for lack of a more creative right. phrase, parts of the state. And you're looking at kind of former coal and steel towns in the northeast part of Pennsylvania. You're looking at parts of the Mon Valley and the southwest part of Pennsylvania. Towns like Nanticoke in Luzerne County was one where I spent a lot of time. You know, that's a county that voted for Obama and then Trump, and then it was the one county in Pennsylvania that made that flip that stuck with Trump. So I think that's a town where you really see the effects of ancestral Democrats who, you know, their grandfathers were Democrats. They were union organizers in the mines. They're now shifting heavily toward Trump and have been, you know, even before 2016. And I think, you know, for him, it's a mobilization turnout effort in places like that, where people are really frustrated with the economy. They don't necessarily love him, but they lean towards him. And then for Harris, I think it's a persuasion effort in places like Nanticoke. You know, can she appeal the way that Biden was able to appeal with his Scranton roots? You know,
right.
And I think it's still an open question. You know, Harris has certainly energized those areas by becoming the nominee the same way she has in other parts of the state. You know, there are blue pockets even in these purple and right and red leaning towns. And she's certainly trying to match Biden's efforts there. She's done rallies in Wilkes-Barre. She's opening offices in parts of the state that, you know, Democrats typically don't. So it's a bit of an open question, but I think those are going to be a real battleground.
Right, because that is sort of the conventional wisdom shorthand right now is, well, Harris isn't Scranton Joe, and his life story and his persona gave him an advantage in those places that you're talking about that she just can't replicate. Asim, I want to talk, though, about where Trump has been more successful as well, and that's in rural areas where he, looking at how much more of the vote he got out in those areas, what was it, like 60 or 70,000 more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. My question for you is, has he wrung all of the juice out of the rural areas, or can he actually win by just getting even bigger margins in those places?
You know, there probably is some juice left to squeeze in rural areas, but Republicans are already doing really, really well there. And what we saw in 2020 was that Democratic votes did increase, but Republican votes increased more. So I don't know. I think that it stands to reason that there are still minds to change there. But it's hard to say. I don't know that is Republicans' best opportunity in the state.
Yeah. Well, is their best opportunity then really to go into just cut down the margin of victory for Harris in some of these suburban areas? Is that really the most reasonable path for Trump? Or is there another way that he can put together a winning coalition?
I think that is one of what I think are probably three paths that Republicans have. I think that if you can cut down suburban margins, that makes a big difference, obviously. I think that will probably be a somewhat uphill fight, given the trends that we've seen recently. I think that the white working class urban vote, as Julia was just saying, remains, you know, an opportunity for Republicans. And I think their messaging has, you know, in the past few cycles been squarely aimed at those kinds of voters. And I think the third path, which is different and I think interesting and maybe a little counterintuitive, is to cut down Democratic margins in inner cities among the non-white urban vote. And we already saw that happen a little bit in 2020. And, you know, until Biden dropped out, there were pretty strong indications from polls that that was going to continue. And it seems like Harris maybe has stopped some of that bleeding, but we don't know. And that could be very determinative in a state like Pennsylvania, which has a huge urban non-white population.
Yeah. Talk to us about that, Julia, about things that you are hearing or seeing in those communities in Philadelphia. Is your sense that the enthusiasm concerns that were there when Biden was on the top of the ticket have been allayed? And is that seems to me problem number one. And then problem number two for Harris goes to Asim's point, which is, are there voters in those regions who aren't just thinking about maybe not staying home, but are actually thinking, you know what, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump this time?
There are, but I do think it's a small number. I think to your first point, there's been a marked enthusiasm shift. And I know everybody hates the rally comparison, but I went to a lot of Biden, I don't even think you could call them rallies. And I mean, they were rough. I interviewed Democratic lawmakers in Philadelphia who couldn't get their 20-year-old daughter to come with them to see the president of the United States in their home city. You know, Harris has a big rally where they put on the light up Taylor Swift bracelets and the arena's packed, and it's a much more festive party atmosphere. It's much more emotional. So I do think enthusiasm, there's been a shift. But I think the real danger for Democrats is Philadelphia is still the poorest big city in America. There are a lot of just disengaged and frustrated voters who have kind of moved away from politics. And even the excitement and branding of the Harris campaign is not going to necessarily bring them back. I don't see a ton of those people saying, yes, but I'm gonna vote for Trump, but there are some. And the thing that, you know, I know drives people crazy when I see when I do these interviews is like in a state that could be as close as this one, those little shifts here or there could make a difference. So I don't mean to diminish the inroads that the former president has made with, you know, some young Black men, some young Latino men. It's there. But I think the bigger fear for Democrats is can they motivate people to turn out?
I absolutely take that point. And that's, you know, I've been hearing this concern for years now among Democrats that, you know, the city of Philadelphia was such a vote driver for so long. It's been replaced in some ways by the suburbs surrounding Philadelphia, but they still need big turnout in Philadelphia to make up for what you guys have pointed out so brilliantly, the loss of Democratic support in the northeastern part of the state, in the northwestern part of the state. Let's talk about one part of the state that I also find fascinating, which is the area in and around Harrisburg, Lancaster, that is one of the few bright spots for Democrats in that it's one of the places that is trending more blue. Can you guys talk about that and how and why this region has become in play, or is it more in play now than it was maybe a few years ago?
So what we've seen is that there's been population growth in these areas more so than any other part of the state, suburbs in general, but particularly those kinds of places. And the people who are moving there are bringing their, you know, somewhat lefty politics from Philadelphia or from other cities, and changing the demographic composition of, you know, Harrisburg, Lancaster, that kind of thing. And you know, I think Julia will know that Scott Perry's district, which was long heavily That's Republican, right. very staunchly conservative, all this sort of thing, is now maybe in play. And I think that's a direct consequence of this.
Yeah. And is your sense that the campaigns also understand this? I know, as you said, the congressional race there, which we're also tracking very closely, is really, really fascinating. But do you see evidence that the Trump and Harris campaigns are making big pushes in those areas?
Absolutely. I was actually just in Lancaster, and the Harris campaign opened an office in Ephrata. I went to the Ephrata Street Fair, and it was funny. The Republican committee had they were selling apple dumplings, and then the Democratic committee was like down the road and kind of lonely. Like there was nobody at the Democrats' table. There was a lot of people to buy apple dumplings from the Republican committee.
So Democrats didn't have dumplings. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. Therein was the key problem. Mm. But also politically, you know, Trump won Lancaster County by 16 points. Ephrata is a 3-1 Republican. But I think exactly what Asim was saying, there has been the growth of Democratic votes there has outpaced, you know, in some areas, the growth of Republican votes. So even though it's plus red, the Harris campaign really sees an opportunity to put an office there and try to capitalize on that. And I think both, you know, that area and parts of Cumberland and Dauphin County could be really key.
And Dauphin is Harrisburg, yes, yes. Which another place we're going to be watching. Okay, so for you all, as election returns are coming in, tell us the counties that you're watching the most closely to give us a clue as to what what could happen.
Well, I think there's different ways to answer this because there's always the bellwether. You know, Northampton is a good example. That's kind of in the Lehigh Valley. It was a Obama, Trump, Biden county. I think a lot of prognosticators are thinking Northampton's going to tell us where we're going.
The entire election. Exactly.
Yeah. But I think that part of the point of the project is that there are also counties that kind of break down the battlegrounds within the battleground. And so seeing how different parts of a county like Bucks is moving, you know, and I know, I think Asim can speak to this, like that is a good microcosm of the state itself and some of the battlegrounds going on there. So how would you answer that, Asim?
I think Bucks is a great answer. I think Northampton is a great answer. I think Erie is an interesting county.
Yeah.
In part because it is heavily represents the sort of white working class demographic that seems to be the one that is changing its mind the most, at least in the past couple of cycles. You know, potentially a place like Berks, where Reading is, or Lancaster. You know, each county offers a different window into a slice of the electorate.
Or just what turnout in Philadelphia is looking like.
Yes, yes.
You know.
That leads me to this question, which is famously, I think everybody remembers 2020 and how long it took for the results in Pennsylvania to be counted and then for the election to be called. Is your expectation, Julia, based on what you're hearing and seeing from county officials there, that this is going to be another experience like that where we're not going to have the answer Wednesday morning or maybe even Thursday?
So in 2020, we did not have the answer on Pennsylvania until Saturday.
Right.
I remember because I was camped out in Scranton waiting for it. I might be being overly optimistic, but I do not think it will be quite that long.
Okay.
The state has had mail balloting for several years now. 2020 was the first application of like widespread mail ballot use. I don't think it'll be Tuesday evening. And I think we'll be writing all the stories to explain to voters why and why that doesn't mean, you know, anything nefarious is going on. But I think your Wednesday, Thursday target could be spot on, although who knows?
I know.
And then of course there are the potential legal challenges that we could be facing and reporting on. But I'm hoping it's not another Saturday situation.
And I guess that's the question, Julia, about legal challenges. And I'm sure you all at the Inquirer are going to probably be spending a lot of time educating voters about how all this works. But what's the expectation on election night? I remember in 2020, again, because one, we were in the middle of a pandemic, but we also knew that Democrats were turning in ballots early while Republicans were going to the polls on election day. And so there was all this talk about the blue mirage and then a red tide that was going to come in later on, either that night or early Wednesday morning. Is that the expectation again for what the vote, as the votes are coming in, what it could look like?
It could be, although I will say the Republican Party in Pennsylvania has made a big mail ballot push. I don't know how effective that will be. You know, voting behavior tends to be pretty ingrained in people. So it might not be quite as stark as it was last time. But I would be surprised if Republican mail ballots matched or exceeded Democratic mail ballot, but that's certainly a push the party is trying to make.
But it won't be as it might not be as stark. And I'm sorry, it actually was that it was like a red and then blue. That was the issue before because they don't count the mail ballots until after the polls have closed, and so, but it may just not be as stark as it was in 2020, but it will still likely be there.
I think it's possible. I think it will be much well, nothing surprises me in Pennsylvania politics, but given the campaign that Republicans have made in the state to get Republicans to vote by mail, I would be surprised if you saw the sort of narrative and pushback this time around, or at least it would be very contradictory if you did, because they're really encouraging voters to vote by mail so that they can track who's voted ahead of the election and get people out who haven't.
And to put some numbers to that, we know that Democratic ballot requests are down a lot from 2020, whereas Republican ballot requests aren't down in the same way. And so just the ratio of Democratic ballot requests to Republican ballot requests is much less out of whack than it was that year. So yeah, you may see this sort of blue shift as the ballots get counted, but the magnitude of that is not going to be the same as it was in 2020.
That is super helpful. Well, you all have been really great giving us some of your time to help us understand how Pennsylvania votes or may vote going forward. And I really, really appreciate it and all the work that you're doing in the Keystone State in so many ways. Really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to The Odd Years. If you liked what you heard or want to make a suggestion, leave us a review or recommend us to a friend. You're our best way to get the word out about what we do. And if you want more from the Cook Political Report, consider becoming a subscriber. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. While you're there, you can use the discount code OD10 to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is available only to new subscribers. The Odd Years is brought to you by the Cook Political Report and is produced by Becca Kaufman. Thanks, and talk to you soon.